Brian Sotheby, former NHL, writes at OilersNation.com. Joins us. Suds, how you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. Are you a pops the second time around?
What's that?
Are you a father for the second time yet?
I am, yes. Last Tuesday, another baby boy, and I'm pretty shocked. I thought for sure we were having a girl, but two boys now, so I'm pretty happy.
Nice. How's mom doing?
She's doing good. Mom and baby are doing well. We were saying the other day that he sure sleeps a lot more than his brother did, and now since we've said that, he's stopped, so he's staying up a little bit more through the night, which is unfortunate, but I guess we asked for it.
Well, there you go. Jinxed it. What a rookie.
Rookie move.
What's Sotheby's, what's the newest addition's name?
Brody Allen Sotheby.
Brody Allen. Wow, I'm disappointed it wasn't Jason, yeah. But hey, we'll move on from that. That's fine. I know it was in the running. Ash is a big fan. I know it was in the running.
Absolutely.
We got lots of things to discuss. First of all, Torrey Krug. How good do you think he is in Boston? You know, he's looking for a big contract. They don't have a lot of cap space. They're going to have to make a trade if they want to get him signed. How valuable do you think he is to that team?
He's a good young player. I remember when he came up a couple of years ago in the playoffs, and he was an impact guy right away. And I think for him to be on that team and to be surrounded with some good players, that obviously probably helped him in his development. And allowed him to settle in and maybe take a few more risks and play the game that he really wants to play, which is an offensive and push the pace type game. They are in some trouble there where they have to try to get him signed and definitely will have to make a move there. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Well, they're going to have to move somebody without a doubt. And you look, you know, a young guy who brings a lot of offense. He doesn't play tough minutes by any stretch. He's not a big defender. But when you can add that much offense from a back end kind of as a specialist guy, he's not a complete disaster in his own zone. I think it's a no-brainer why they're going to want to sign him. I'm just curious what they're going to have to sign him for.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you see everything going on with Justin Schultz right now as well. And I think the situation that Krug has found himself in is a little bit different than Schultz just because he has had that protection. He just said he doesn't have to play those real tough minutes. They have guys like Chara and Boychuk and some other defensive-minded guys that can handle those big minutes. And so that has been favorable for him. But at the same time, on a team like that where you have some big bodies, you have guys that are getting up there in age, he is a big part of that team, and you have to be able to, in today's game, move the puck, get the puck out of your own end, and generate offense. And in the East, they've been able to do that. And like I said, he's a guy that when you watch the game, you notice him. You notice him on the power play. You notice him creating stuff 5-on-5 and offensive stuff. And whether it's for his defensive play or just the team around him that sort of can protect his style of play, you don't notice him making as many glaring defensive lapse mistakes. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to get him signed for. And there's a few guys still out there that need to get something done, and we're getting down to the wire here.
Brian Sotheby joins us. What do you make of the head coach, Todd McClellan, basically going no captain and no assistants when the season starts? They're going to go in fresh. What do you make of that?
It's interesting. You know, I think I'm a little bit maybe in the minority, or I'm not sure what the general public think about the I think it's a bit of an overreaction as far as not so much the captaincy part, but just everything coming out and all the publicity about how they're changing everything. And they haven't made any glaring moves or trades, so I guess that's a great thing. And I don't think – I'm not trying to say that they should ever be satisfied. That organization has had a lot of great regular seasons and has never been able to do anything in the postseason, but they had a very good LA Kings team to go up against, and they lost four straight, which was terrible, but you see just how good that LA Kings team was as well, and I think people forget that. There's a lot going on. There has to be a lot going on behind the scenes in that dressing room that they're obviously not happy about. I'm not a big believer in that the leader of your team always is the guy that wears the C. I think a lot of times the C, there's a lot made about it that maybe doesn't mean that much behind the scenes. If Joe Thornton's a big personality in that locker room, he's going to be a big personality in that locker room whether he wears a C or not. And if they're unhappy with the things Jumbo Joe's doing or saying or the way that he is in practice or on the ice, he's going to be that way with or without the C. I think what they're trying to do, if that's the case, is to light a fire under him and light a fire under all those guys and sort of change the direction if they're not able to trade those guys or change the culture that way. But if the players like him, if the guys still listen to what he has to say and he's not necessarily going to change, whether he has a C or not isn't going to make that much of a difference.
Well, exactly, right? It's just the letter. Some of your best leaders are guys. Like Gretzky was the captain in Edmonton when they were winning all their Stanley Cups, and everyone always talked about Messier being the leader, right? So in different ways, right?
It can come from anywhere. You know, it just depends the culture of your dressing room, the guys that are in your room. I mean, a lot of teams are hesitant to put letters on third or fourth line guys because to the fans and to the way you're marketing your team, you want to have your superstar or that type of player be the face of your franchise. And sometimes they are. Sometimes they are the guy that absolutely everyone follows, and when he speaks, everyone listens. And other times, it is just that. It's a letter on a guy that can score a lot of goals, a guy that you count on, but maybe not necessarily a guy that when he talks in the dressing room, it rallies everyone, or it just there can be more voices and more people in that locker room than just a guy that scores 50 goals a year. A guy that plays 5 or 6 minutes a night can have relationships within that dressing room and be a big part of that room, even if he's not wearing a letter.
I looked at Joe Thornton, you know, the meltdown of the Sharks last season. We can call it a meltdown or, you know, great adjustments by the LA Kings, either way you look at it. This is a team that has been a great team for a decade. They haven't won the Stanley Cup. They haven't made it to the Stanley Cup final. So, obviously, they haven't reached their goal. If you're the Sharks, though, like, do you think moving Joe Thornton out would make that much of a difference? Because I don't see any way they could make a trade for Thornton where they'd actually win the trade.
Yeah, I don't think at this point, with his age especially, that they would win any trade, like you just said. And it just goes to show you how hard it is to win in this league. Their team, again, every year they are right there. Everyone at the start of the playoffs, we did it again this year, where they're the team to beat. Everyone thinks that they're going to do it, and for whatever reason, they just can't get it done. And I know Joe's taken a lot of heat and Patrick Marleau and those guys, but if you look at the things they've done in the last few years in the playoffs, they've been guys that have stepped up. They've contributed. And it's really bizarre to see the collapse, or like you just said, whatever it was, the LA Kings making great adjustments, that they just couldn't get it done. I think at some point it begins to weigh on the veterans. They start to question if they can ever get it done, and maybe that sort of creeps into the locker room. But I think at this point it's going to be tough for them to trade him and kind of rejig that whole franchise and the culture without losing the trade. And I just don't know. I think he's still a very good player in this league. He's a guy that gets you to the playoffs every year. And maybe you just have to look at, come playoff time, elevating other players, giving him a lesser role. If they really feel that something that Joe Thornton is doing in the postseason, maybe they have to look at taking a step back. But I still think he's a guy that, especially in the Western Conference, big body, guy that can go up against some bigger, more physical type guys, and he's a handful down low. He makes your team better, I have to think. I don't know, again, what's going on behind the scenes, if there is stuff in the dressing room there where that might be hurting that locker room. But from the things that you see on the ice, and I think he's matured in the playoffs over the last 3 or 4 years, he's getting up there in age. You'd think they're hungry. I wouldn't be looking to move him, but again, I'm not in that locker room every day.
Yeah, it's always interesting to know exactly what's going on. I found it funny that, you know, they felt like it was going to become Logan Couture's team. And that now, I know there was a lot of that from the media, but I even got a sense of it from the organization, Brian. And being a former player in the room, I just don't see how that's a smart thing for anyone to say how it's going to become his team. In the game of hockey, I don't know if there's ever your team, right? You played on a lot of. Was there one clear-cut, obvious personality on every team?
I wouldn't say maybe one clear cut, but there obviously are a few guys that sort of stand out on every team that you're on. One of the best leaders I ever played with was Ole Kolzig. As a young guy, I mean, those were teams with a lot of older veteran guys, Jaromir Jagr, Mike Greer, Peter Bondra, Calle Johansson. And Ole Kolzig was one guy that was a great leader. He was just able to step up in the room and then talk. And when he did, everyone listened. Most rooms have one or two guys. Having been through sort of what the Sharks did, it is strange to think that all of a sudden Logan Couture, while sure, maybe he might begin eating more ice time or, you know, getting more minutes, or the fans might think that it's Logan Couture's team. If Joe Thornton has his presence in that locker room and has the relationships with the guys, it's still probably going to be his team. And when I speak to being through it, I wasn't there at the time, but the year before I got to Dallas, Brendan Morrow had just taken the C from Mike Modano. And while that was a good move, as far as Brendan Morrow at that time sort of suited the identity of who the Dallas Stars wanted to be. They wanted to be a more physical, a grittier team. Mike was sort of getting into the twilight years of his career. His role was lessening. He was becoming a third-line guy. He wasn't playing as many minutes. And although it, on paper or with a letter, wasn't Mike Modano's team, he still, if Mike Modano wanted something done in the dressing room, to the trainers, to the players, to the fans, the city, Mike Modano was still the face of the franchise, whether he had the letter or not. So that's kind of how I see this sort of shaking out in San Jose. With now, Joe hasn't been there quite as long as Modano and probably doesn't have the same presence. But if he's still in that locker room and you have Joe Thornton, one of the best players in the NHL, I find it hard to believe it's going to come Logan Couture's team.
And one last one. Justin Schultz still doesn't have a contract with the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. I've said from all along, bridge contract makes the most sense to me. And when I look at a bridge contract, people keep throwing out $3 million. I don't even pay him $3 million. In a $70 million cap, P.K. Subban got $2.85 million as his cap hit. He made $2 million the first year, then it went up to $3.75 the second year. I don't see any reason to pay Schultz more. What would you do if you're the Oilers?
Well, I think they need to try to get a bridge deal done. Obviously, with a guy like Schultz, I still don't think he's anywhere near where his potential could be, or a guy that should warrant that type of money at this point. He's a very good player. He's an offensive guy, but there's a lot of his game that needs some work and to round into an NHL player. And I think when you compare him to P.K. Subban a couple years ago, I still see a guy. I know their offensive numbers were fairly similar, but even back then, a guy like P.K., he was a personality. He's a guy that you can tell has that sort of X factor, that it factor. He's a guy that plays physical. He's bigger body, and he has that charisma and those leadership type qualities. And when I see a guy like Justin Schultz, I see a very good player when he's on the ice. I see a guy that wants the puck, but I see a complimentary guy in the locker room. I don't see that presence. I don't see that vocal leader type guy, and I don't see a lot of other intangibles when it comes to physicality and even the defensive side that PK had. So for me, I look, yeah, if it's north of three, I don't think it's warranted. I imagine the way things are going, they might have to go there to get a deal done, but I know some people are saying 3-5 plus and four. To me, that's crazy for a guy that really hasn't done a lot in this league. And I still think a lot of this stuff will shake out. There's always juggling that goes on behind the scenes, and I would imagine as we get closer here, that's when everyone will start to really buckle down, and one side is going to break or bend. But I hope that he's not being too unreasonable, and sort of they both sort of find a middle ground here.
Well, I'll tell you, sure, it hurts the Edmonton Oilers, but historically, you sit out training camp early in a year without a lot of experience. And I know P.K. Subban did it in lockout season. I think it's a little bit different because guys were all sitting out for a long time. That most guys are playing catch-up, and it's hard to play catch-up.
It is. I've seen it. I remember one guy, Danis Zubris, did it when I was a young kid, and I didn't quite understand what everyone was talking about when they were saying that this is going to hurt or he should be here and all this stuff. And players a lot of times agree or side with the players. I mean, if a guy is deserving of it, he should get compensated for it. But at the same time, there's no denying that being at NHL skates and going through the paces and practices that they'll be pushed at, there's nothing like it, and you can't do it on your own. All those guys right now, especially in Edmonton, are either skating with Perry Perns or at the Bears camp, and those are good skates. There's guys there that are going to push one another, but it's a whole other level when you get to training camp. Now you have everyone that's fighting and ratcheting up their level of play. And when you had all these guys to skate with before, they're gone now. So you've got no one to push you. You've got no one to play against. You've got no one to battle against, bump you, and really push you in those moments that are hard to get through, to push you to bag skate, to push you through those burning leg thing sensation. So it's tough to stay in shape and to keep that motivation high and to push yourself when you don't have anyone else around you.
Thuds, congrats on your second son. Enjoy some sleepless nights, and we'll talk to you on Friday.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.